हरिः ॐ सहनववतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे.
So basically, the Mayavadis, they have everything in Sambandha wrong. Material nature doesn't exist, we don't exist, and God is a form, a person doesn't exist. So all there is Brahman, but then, you know, where do these other things come from and why are they important? So. Okay. So, Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila, chapter 17, the Lord travels to Vrindavan, page 32. After hearing the description of Lord Krishna from the male parrot, the female parrot began to recite a description of Srimati Radharani. The female parrot said, Srimati Radharani's affection, her exquisite beauty and good behavior, her artistic dancing and chanting, and her poetic compositions are all so attractive that they attract the mind of Krishna, who attracts the mind of everyone in the universe. Footnote 10. This is a verse also found in Govinda Lilamrita 13:30. Thereafter, the male parrot said, Krishna is the enchanter of the mind of Cupid. He then began to recite another verse. The male parrot then said, My dear Sari, female parrot, Sri Krishna carries a flute and enchants the hearts of all women throughout the universe. He is specifically the enjoyer of the beautiful gopis. And he is the enchanter of Cupid also. Let him be glorified. Footnote 11. Govinda Lilamrita 13:31. Then the female parrot began to speak jokingly to the male parrot, and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was struck with wonderful ecstatic love to hear her speak. The female parrot said, When Lord Sri Krishna is with Radharani, he is the enchanter of Cupid. Otherwise, when he is alone, he himself is enchanted by erotic feelings, even though he enchants the whole universe. Govinda Lilamrita 13:32. Both parrots then flew onto a tree branch, and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu began to watch the dancing of the peacocks with curiosity. When the Lord saw the bluish necks of the peacocks, his remembrance of Krishna immediately awakened, and he fell to the ground in ecstatic love. When the Brahmin saw that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was unconscious, he and Balabhadra Bhattacharya took care of him. They hastily sprinkled water over the Lord's body. Then they took up his outer cloth and began to fan him with it. They then began to chant the holy name of Krishna into the Lord's ear. When the Lord regained consciousness, he began rolling on the ground. When the Lord rolled on the ground, sharp thorns injured his body. Taking him on his lap, Balabhadra Bhattacharya pacified him. The mind of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wandered in ecstatic love of Krishna. He immediately stood up and said, Chant, chant. Then he himself began to dance. Being thus ordered by the Lord, both Balabhadra Bhattacharya and the Brahmin began to chant the holy name of Krishna. Then the Lord, dancing and dancing, proceeded along the path. The Brahmin was astounded to see the symptoms of ecstatic love exhibited by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He then became anxious to give the Lord protection. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mind was absorbed in ecstatic love at Jagannath Puri. But when he passed along the road on the way to Vrindavan, the love increased 100 times. The Lord's ecstatic love increased 1,000 times when he visited Mathura, but it increased 100,000 times when he wandered in the forests of Vrindavan. When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was elsewhere, the very name of Vrindavan was sufficient to increase his ecstatic love. Now, when he was actually traveling in the Vrindavan forest, his mind was absorbed in great ecstatic love day and night. He ate and bathed simply out of habit. Thus I have written a description of the ecstatic love Lord Chaitanya manifested in one of the places he visited while walking through the 12 forests of Vrindavan. To describe what he experienced everywhere would be impossible. Lord Ananta writes millions of books elaborately describing the transformations of ecstatic love experienced by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Vrindavan. Since Lord Ananta himself cannot describe even a fragment of these pastimes, I am simply pointing out the direction. It means Ananta is not able to describe even a part of the pastime, so he just says, you know, over here, you know, like that. The whole world became merged in the inundation of the pastimes of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. One can swim in that water to the extent that he has strength. Praying at the lotus feet of Sri Rupa and Sri Raghunath, always desiring their mercy, I, Krishnadas, narrate Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, following in their footsteps. And so, this aspect of swimming in the water, how much is, you know, to your strength, to what your ability is, then this ocean of nectar of Krishna and Radharani's pastimes, then that to one's individual qualification one appreciates. So someone may appreciate more, someone less, like that. But as we, by associating with these great personalities, then we can take on that mood that they have. But we always have to remember is wherever they were now, they're farther ahead. And they're expanding more quickly. So we'll always be benefited by that association, but we will never, you know, become the same. But as far as community goes, it's enough to take part in the pastimes, and in that way one's the same, because it has the same qualities are there. Just the intensity and the depth is much greater. Does that
make sense?
Yeah. Conclusion. Those who follow social customs and behavior forget to follow the path chalked out by the Mahajans. Thus they are offenders at the feet of the Mahajanas, 185 purport. So the social customs and all that are there for support of Krishna consciousness. This is always a major difficulty, is that there are those who, it's about the social customs and behavior, and those that they don't care about these things because they don't understand. So we have to be very, very careful about this aspect being being entangled in the problem of niyamagraha, right? Means there's the natural form in which they'll be expressed, the natural ways in which to express, but it's about the expression. And so sometimes it may go in that natural form, and sometimes it may be a little different. So the point is if it's always focused on Krishna's pleasure, according to his, you know, what pleases him, then it will always work out. One will follow the rule where it's supportive, and one may miss following when other situations come up. But to say is, no, without following the rule, you can't get bhakti, and no, bhakti doesn't require any rules. It's just all bhav. But where does this bhav come from? If you don't have rati, where's the bhav from? You know? Does that make sense? Yeah. You know, it's like saying, we don't need to work. Why do you work? We just spend the money and get what we want. But where does the money come from? You know? But the one, it's all about we have the money and all that, but you're not buying anything. The others are, no, we'll buy whatever we want, but they're not working to get the money. So that's niyamagraha. So it's a fine point. It's about Krishna. You know? That's the element. It's about Krishna. So in these advanced aspects, it means that you see it's about Krishna. Therefore, you're following sadhana and that because it's pleasing to Krishna. Right? We may, in the beginning, we follow sadhana because we'll get purified, we'll get freed from material entanglement. That's okay, we'll develop love for Krishna. But then what about Krishna's satisfaction? That's the highest appreciation. You know, like we were seeing in the morning, the examples of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur on the nature of Srimati Radharani's love. So because she's willing to anything in her position, whatever she's gained by any of her activities, she's willing to give up everything if it will benefit Krishna. That shows her attraction to Krishna. Right? So that establishes the position. That no matter what Krishna does, you know, he's nice, he's not nice, that shows prema. And that whenever she hears things about Krishna, even if they're not true, she just hears that Krishna's, in a difficult situation, then the feelings she has are, you know, so caring and all that, that's Mahabhava. So we see in all these, it's about Krishna. That's the central feature. That's why Radharani is so special. She's the devotee. Everybody else is assisting. You know, and because you're assisting, that makes you a devotee. But we're devotee of the devotee. And for us, we're devotee of the devotee of the devotee. Is that... Yeah? A sadhu, or honest man, is called a mahajana, or a mahatma. In the material world, the word mahatma is understood in different ways by different religions. Mundaners also come up with their different angles of vision. For the conditioned soul, busy in sense gratification, a mahajana is recognized according to the proportion of sense gratification he offers. Right? You know, how much can you get from? You know, how much is he making facility for? In this material world, karmis, fruit of workers, actors, are accepted as mahajanas by foolish people who do not know the value of devotional service. So somebody's doing very great in the material world, you know, really successful, they'll think they're a great personality. Yes. Or they're making things available and everybody else gets the benefit and then they're a great personality. The mundane intelligence and mental speculative methods of such foolish people are under the control of the three modes of material nature. Consequently, they cannot understand unalloyed devotional service. They are attracted by material activities and they become worshippers of material nature. Right? So either in the karmi, someone in the field of jnana, someone in the field of yoga, you know, whatever it is that's valuable to you, someone who's greater at it, then they are mahatmas. And they're our inspiration. Because in the material world, you have to have inspiration. Yes. Yes. Right? You know, the living entity needs anyway. Yes. Yes. So spiritual, then you take that spiritual. Material, then you take it from the material. Thus, they are known as fruit of actors. They even become entangled in material activities disguised as spiritual activities. In the Bhagavad Gita, such people are described as Vedavada Rata, supposed followers of the Vedas. They do not understand the real purport of the Vedas, yet they think of themselves as Vedic authorities. 185 purport. Right, so they're following the Veda, but the purpose of the Veda they're not catching. They're just following the external form. Mm-hmm. So that's an important aspect, is that as is of yes.
In that context, what's the difference between a Mahatma and Atmarama?
They can be the same thing, because it says sadhu or honest mind is called mahajana or mahatma. So it just means somebody who's situated very nicely, you know, on the transcendental platform. Then that's a sadhu, that's a mahajana. You know, somebody to follow. So like Prahlad Maharaj, Bhishma Dev, Narada, Brahma, like this, they're mahajanas. They're authorities. So they're the ones then taking their inspiration. We see each one has some unique position. You know, Brahma's managing the whole universe, and he's a Mahatma. Right? Shiva destroying the whole universe. He's a Mahatma. You know, Prahlad Maharaj is a great king in that he meditates on the Lord. Narad Muni is a Brahmachar, and he just travels and preaches and the glories of the Lord. And so, it's all these, they all are situated differently. You know, and so accordingly, then they are, you know, established in the Lord. So that's the central feature. It's the Lord. It's not the position they're in. That just shows that whatever your position, you can be absorbed in the Lord, like the Mahajanas. So the idea is that, no, there's certain social customs and behavior. Yes, that's favorable for Krishna consciousness. Right? In other words, you are Krishna conscious, people around you are becoming Krishna conscious. Just like, let's say, for example, you sometimes see, like, during festivals and big programs like that, sometimes then, you know, the darshan of the deities is there, and then the kirtan goes, and it's really big kirtan, everyone's absorbed, it's like that, and the kirtan just keeps on going. And it doesn't stop for the class. So you can say, but you know, what about, you know, the rules here? But the whole point of that is to be engaged in the hearing and chanting, and everybody's already nicely engaged. You know, if it's a regular kirtan, if you stop, everyone's happy. But this is just, everyone's so absorbed, no one even remembers. It's only at the end, when you stop the kirtan, like about 10 or 10:30, then they kind of notice that, you know, they missed class and breakfast. But before that, they didn't, then no one cared. No one knew. So that's the whole thing, is you don't worry about these things. There'll be times like that. And other times, then it's just natural you do. Now, so you get that young brahmachari, he was so excited by that, so he tries to do that, and everyone's saying, you know, just, okay, nice, but, you know, it's time for class. Then it's just, you know, it has its position, it has its place. You know. So like that, you have to see is that the social customs and behavior are important in how they support. And at the same time as they're not being followed so strictly is only if it supports. So the thing is, no, it always has to be the rule, or it never has to be the rule. These are both weak. Because it's does it support Krishna consciousness? That's the whole point. You know, that's it. And what the acharyas they give us, that's the path we follow. We don't make up our own path because, it works for me. So now I have this path, and now everyone can follow me down this path. Because we always have to remember, in the Pied Piper, no one knows what happened to the kids. You know? Like that. So one has to be very careful there. Is that, no, the Mahajans, they give the path. We follow that path. You know, and there'll always be some specialness and uniqueness, but you can't say, no, we don't have to follow that path. We got another path. And that will take us there. You know? I mean, we have to remember that, what's his name? Vivekananda already tried that. And where did he try it? You can say, in America. Unless one comes to the absolute truth, there is no possibility of agreement. On the material platform, there's no possibility of agreement. Therefore, there are different kinds of religious systems. But the absolute truth is one. And when one is situated in the absolute truth, there is no disagreement. Right? Because when it's all about Krishna, how can there be disagreement? Disagreement will be in detail. Detail is to attain a particular principle. That principle is in support of pleasing Krishna. So if one's absorbed in Krishna and pleasing Krishna, where will be the problem in difference of detail? Right? So that's the difficulty.
Right.
Yes.
In the morning we were asking about the Samatharati. That is this. It goes beyond the boundaries of social restrictions.
Okay, it goes beyond that. Okay, nice. Okay, so before that, they'll stay within, like the Brahmins and all that.
There are three levels of rati. First one is the Sadharana rati, which is of Puja, is given as an example.
Okay.
Then the Samanjasa rati, which is of Dwaraka queens and all.
Okay.
They are the ones who stay within the rules.
Rules, okay.
And then Samartha rati is of the gopis.
Okay, so then you see, Dwaraka stays within the rules. And then we see Kubja, she doesn't necessarily follow the rules, but it's more about herself, but connected to Krishna. And then in Vrindavan, it's about Krishna, and they happen to be, you know, they have that rati. So it's the highest. So you see, is both ends may appear to be, but one has the actual spontaneity. And the other one then has some mixes. You know, some other elements there. You know, in other words, it has elements of liberation to it. Let's put it that way. There's nothing mundane. There are many different religions throughout the world because they are not all on the absolute platform of devotional service, right? They all accept that there's the Supreme Lord. Right? Oh, it means you may have some that don't. But whatever it is, generally your world, they accept that there's some absolute. But they're not on the absolute platform of devotional service, because it's not about devotional service. They're generally not, against devotional service. But it doesn't necessarily mean that what they're doing is focused on devotional service. Generally it's focused on karma. Right? Some will get a little bit more into jnana, you know, trying to figure out how many angels are dancing on the head of a pin or something. Like that. That's what the monks sit around. What do the Hasids sit around thinking about?
We don't want to discuss that.
Oh, okay. He said.
It's non-kosher stuff.
Oh, okay.
Because here you have to follow kosher, but there, no kosher is fine.
Okay. More smoke. I thought you were saying, you know.
Bring it on.
Yeah, we just put this thing in the middle, right? And everybody, you know, that way it'll keep it going. Otherwise, he has to fan it and all that.
Put the blanket over the bucket.
No mosquitoes. No mosquitoes. So we're not saying that they're not religious and that they're not theistic. What we're saying is that they're not on the absolute platform of devotional service, because that's not their focus. And if you ask, that won't be the focus. Right? But if you bring it up about devotional service, they don't have a problem with it. You know? On the material platform, religious systems are different. Srimad Bhagavatam defines them from the very beginning as Dharma Kaitava, cheating religions, right? Because they're taking you away from pure devotional service. That. None of these religions is actually genuine. The genuine religious system is that which enables one to become a lover of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You take that aspect, now you're dealing with the genuine aspect. Because the point is, the religion keeps everybody busy, you know, to whatever degree they can. So when you get to the point of it's about developing love for Krishna, you're right, following the footsteps of the great personalities, you know, as recommended, now you're talking about genuine. Otherwise, before that, you're going to end up with something else. You're going to end up with a good life here, or going to heaven, or, you know, something like that. Some other aspect, being freed from material difficulties. That's all that's going to be offered. So it's not actually, it's just still material. That's why it says it's material religion. But as soon as that same effort is made to please the Lord in devotion, now it becomes genuine. So we see it's the attitude that makes the difference. So that's the problem. They'll fight over their external differences, that's what makes them proper and everybody else not proper. But the point is no, it's developing love for God. That's what makes proper. And everything else is material. Does that make sense? So that's why it doesn't matter what they're using, as long as it's going to help them develop love for God. The supreme occupation, Dharma, for all humanity, is that by which men can attain loving devotional service under the transcendent Lord. Such devotional service must be unmotivated and uninterrupted in order to completely satisfy the self. Right? So that's the definition. That's how you're following? It'll work. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.2.6. On this platform, there is nothing but the service of the Lord. When a person has no ulterior motive, there is certainly oneness and agreement of principles. Since everyone has a different body and mind, different types of religions are needed. But when one is situated on the spiritual platform, there are no bodily and mental differences. Consequently, on the absolute platform, there is oneness in religion. 184, purport. Right, so in the Vedas itself, because we're talking about the world religions and all this, and they within themselves, then they have so many different points, you know, like some people are very austere, some people are very charitable. You know, some people do philanthropic work. So many different things that they do, different kinds of religious work. So in the Vedic system also, you have so many different kinds of of religious activities. And they're all material unless they're connected with the Lord with the idea of pure devotional service. Then they take on the transcendental position. So that's the whole point, is that all these, it's just like you can say, oh no, but they're so different. But if the purpose is the same, just like the person who gives in charity is going to be different from the person who is focusing on his, you know, varnashram position, or the person who's studying the scriptures and all that, or the person who's out in the forest performing austerities. The forms are very different, right? But because they come from the Vedas and that, there's a commonality between them and the culture and how they, their values and all that. So all these different religious systems can work cooperatively together, right? As it was one culture. But as following social custom behavior, forget to follow the path chalked out by the Mahajans, they are offenders at the feet of the Mahajans. So you always have to remember is that, no, but even though they're all cooperating nice together, unless it's coming to the lotus feet of the Lord. Like sometimes it's thought, oh no, we have to create community and all work together and all that. Why? That's just a religious aspect. You know, since when does it say don't be religious? Right? It's about religion being engaged in the Lord's service. That's sadhana. Right? So our nature, our religion is service. So we engage that in the Lord's service. So that's where it starts. His nature is the supreme enjoyer. Our nature is we're the servant. And so like that, then when there's no alter motive, then it all works together. There is no problem. Now these others, they've come up by different time. You know, as it is, different positions and they have different things that they use. And so other places and this and that, they have there. And so someone is using that, then fine. But the point is it has to be seen that it is useful in developing pure devotion. Does that make sense? That. So it can't have ulterior motives like that. Unmotivated and uninterrupted. Mm-hmm. So you can say, oh yes, but we're not from... you know, followers of the Vedas, so therefore, you know, we have different bodily needs and different mental needs, so therefore we need a different religious process. That's fine, but what's the reason for that particular perspective? Is it unmotivated? Is it uninterrupted? Free from karma and jnana? And if it is, great. But if it's not, then don't compare.
Another room conversation in the morning walk, the Rebbe is asking about the value of religious scriptures that glorify God. He said, this is Veda. If they glorify God, that is considered Veda. And then they asked me about Joan of Arc. He says, how come Joan of Arc is not in the Srimad Bhagavatam? Prabhupada says, who said she's not in the Srimad Bhagavatam? She died for God. She is in the Srimad Bhagavatam.
Yes, just that we've just been given 18,000 shlokas,
right.
While I think its original size is a bit bigger. People who accept such imitators as Mahajanas have no faith in Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Rather, they accept godless cheaters who present themselves as incarnations of God and cheat foolish people within the material world by word jugglery. Thus, many rascals are accepted as Mahajanas. It is those who are devoid of devotional service who sometimes mistakenly accept persons with mundane motives as Mahajanas. The only motive must be Krishna Bhakti, devotional service to the Lord, 185 purport. As long as the living entity is conditioned by the three modes of material nature, goodness, passion, and ignorance, the objects of his material senses, material form, taste, smell, sound, and touch, will not help him understand spiritual knowledge and bliss. Right? So, when the senses are engaged nice, properly in the Lord's service, then they become instruments to help understand the Lord and our relationship. But if they're not, if they're conditioned by those and attached to those, then they block. We're unable to see. So that's the thing, is Krishna reveals himself. He's self-revealing. is not a technique we can use to make that reveal. What was that the other day we were saying from this aspect of looking for technique and all that?
Jiva Goswami says that one is actually in spiritual world, one is protected by the bliss. That's why he doesn't come under the covering of Maya Dev. So
okay.
The bliss one experiences
is what protects him. Yeah, so it's like Krishna says in the Gita, when you taste a higher taste, you give up the lower taste. Mm-hmm. Right? So it's that happiness, that experience of that, that's what protects you from the lower thing. Because you have a higher, you don't want to do something lower. You know, it's just like, I think Prabhupada mentions about, you know, the child's out in the backyard eating mud, so you offer him, so it's sandesh, and that once they get the taste from that, they don't want to eat mud anymore. Mud's there, plenty of mud. You know? But there's no interest because of the higher taste. So that's the whole point. The taste in Krishna consciousness is what drives everything forward. And the the rules and regulations, the knowledge, the skills, these aspects are there to support the experience of that taste, or to purify you and to bring you forward to that taste. But it's not that the jnana and kriya, that's what generates bhakti. You know what I'm saying? The taste. The taste comes from taste. Does that make sense? You know, taste comes from taste. It doesn't come from the pots and pans and spoons. Right? Taste comes from itself. So that's the thing. It's coming from, Krishna's independent. He's not dependent upon anything else. So this aspect is, we have to be very careful is here, because in this we see is that all these activities, they're useful if they're supporting this development of taste. But if they're not supporting the development of taste, then they're a distraction. But that doesn't mean that they should be given up. It means you should focus on the taste. You know, it's like the guys in the kitchen, you know, talking about this pot and this pan and how much trouble it was and how great it is and how everybody else has stupid stuff and why doesn't everyone... Where's the cooking going on? Does that mean then you have to get rid of the kitchen? No, it means that shut up and cook. Right? You know, you don't have to no?
It's a good formula, shut up.
Yeah. Or if you can't stand the heat, get out of the kitchen.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so it's just like, yeah. So the whole idea is that these things are useful. But that doesn't mean that because it's about devotional service and these other things don't matter. It's just about the bhav. That's sahajyas. And it's just about the technique and all that, you know, and the bhav. We're not like, that's the smartest. So the path down the middle means you're performing, you're using all the rules and regulations and knowledge to serve Krishna, please Krishna. So there's primary and secondary. This idea of there's primary, we don't need secondary. Oh, if the secondary is there, secondary generates primary. No, shaktis don't generate the shaktiman. You appreciate the shaktiman through the shakti. How do you understand that there is an electric generator? By seeing the electricity. Then you understand, oh, here's a generator. But it's independent. It's a generator whether you see the electricity or not. But the electricity doesn't produce the generator. So the two go together. They're non-different. But there's a difference. Right? Krishna's energies are non-different. But then for action, then Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, then you see the difference. Right? And so therefore, in action, that gives rise to the hladini, to the taste. Therefore, action is there because it gives taste. Yes. So, yes.
Previously, we were reading when Mahaprabhu met Ramananda Rai for the first time. Then he became interested when Ramananda Rai suggested that you soak your mind in Krishna Bhakti Ras.
Mm.
And then that's what we're trying to do. The difficulty seems to be is that certain objects, they don't absorb rasa. Like, you say, for example, like a very hard or very dry object, it doesn't absorb moisture.
Right.
So it has to sit there like for years. So, but then material rasa, because Bhaktivinoda Thakur in Chaitanya Shikshamrita, he mentions that everything is driven by rasa. There's no taste, there's no life.
Yes.
But then material rasa, material enjoyment.
There's also a thing, no taste, no light. So coming up with so many things.
It's like easily available.
Yes.
So even for the devotees, to soak our mind in Krishna Bhakti rasa, it takes a while to soften the mind.
Right.
But then we need some fuel, you know. So this becomes, like you mentioned, haipitya pratiyata. So it's not without interruption, and it's not...
Unmotivated.
Unmotivated, exactly. Yeah. So there's some...
No, the thing is that that's why then the one I think one of the acharyas is pointing out, maybe Jiva Goswami, is that in the Anyabhilashita, the ita part is iti, then that aspect means that following this and that in pursuance of this, right? So then there's going to be, so wherever you are able to situate yourself, whichever aspect of the religious processes, then fits for you, right? Because we have 64 items of devotional service, the nine processes, devotion, and somebody will be more into one, someone into another, but any one of them can bring about perfection, right? You know, because that's the point. Sadhana brings you to bhava to prema. So wherever you can situate yourself, then that's what it is. That's why then, you know, for some the taste is, you know, being the brahmacharis, for some the taste is being the grihasthas, for some the taste is being the vanaprasthas, other the sannyasis, or Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra. They all have their taste, but they're doing it for Krishna. Some people are very enthusiastic to go to a meeting. You know? Some don't want to go to a meeting. Some go because that's your duty. You know? So the point is that the wherever you can situate yourself, you know, as recommended by the acharyas, then that's what is the platform to be at. So in that way, everybody can find their inspiration, you know, in the way of those aspects. But it's following the footsteps of the Mahajanas, that's what's going to be the actual inspiring. So then we're seeing how Lord Chaitanya, how his associates, how they performed their activities, you know, in the Bhagavatam, Gita, like this, we have the devotees around us, we have the histories of the acharyas. You know, does that make sense?
That's that's the reason why in Madhurya Kadambini it's mentioned Shraddha and Sadhu Sangha carry you all the way to prem.
Yes.
That's how you get the taste. The
yes.
Taste and the Sadhu Sangha. That's where you get the juice.
Mm. Yes.
Having it.
So does that mean when he comes over to your house, you'll give him some juice?
Anything.
Okay.
Bhakti Ras. I think Ras is also juice.
Juice, yeah, yeah, it is. So it's nectarine juice, like that.
Yeah.
You know, it's a nice.
Rasam.
Huh?
You in there, we have rasam. That's why we all move to Bengal.
Yeah.
The only problem is that it depends upon who's serving. You want to make sure the pious is not just some, more. So you want the pious shagar, right? You know. No? Yeah. Anyone whose work is not meant for elevating him to religious life, anyone whose religious ritualistic performances do not raise him to renunciation, right? Means, you know, giving up the material endeavor. And anyone situated in renunciation that does not lead him to devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead must be considered dead, although he is breathing. Srimad Bhagavatam 3:23-56. Yes, yeah, so the point is whatever work you're doing, if that doesn't bring you to religious life, a regulated life and this and that, then it doesn't have any meaning. So you can say we're this and we're that, so we're following our religion, so what's that religion? What's the regulation? Because religion means that following God's laws. So how are you following God's laws? Right? You regulate the life in a particular aspect. Like, you know, if you're studying, then you're going to be studying the scriptures. Right? Then you're going to be studying by following the footsteps of the acharyas from their commentaries. That you're going to read the complete book. You're not just going to jump around here and there. You know, there's regulation on that. Right? It doesn't mean it doesn't get in the way of other things that you're doing. You know, you don't get up in the morning without brushing your teeth, start reading and all that, and then after breakfast, then take your bath. You know, you don't do that. You know, there's regulation. So the point is that it has to bring you to a religious life, a regulated life. That's what religion is for, is regulate the life in a way that it will improve, you know, the character, will improve, will purify the existence. And so then that brings you to renunciation. And so if by following that, you don't give up, so like we were discussing this morning, if we take a stance that, oh no, we have this upadhi, we're from this place, or we're from this background, and so therefore then we can't do all these things. But if what you're doing doesn't bring you to regulating your life, and that doesn't bring you to giving up this upadhis and these kind of material endeavors, then it's not proper.
This religious life refers to the Dharma and Dharma Arthakama Moksha?
You could say yes.
Yes.
Because the
renunciation is moksha.
That's there. But I think what's being pointed out here is that if work you're doing, from that you don't become regulated in line with Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, and from that you don't become detached from trying to gain from the material position. And then from that renunciation, you know, then you don't try for devotional service. So in other words, if whatever you're doing doesn't bring you to theistic morality, and that doesn't bring you to liberation, and that doesn't bring you to bhakti, then it's a waste of time. You know, like that. Because the living entity is there, but he's not getting any benefits, so he's as good as dead. Body's breathing, but he's as good as dead. You know, it's like you have the cage and you polish nicely, but no food for the bird. You know, like that. So it has to follow that line. You know, in other words, your action should bring you to proper religious karma. That karma should bring you to renunciation. That renunciation should bring you to bhakti. Yes. So, as devotees, we're trying to do everything, but in that, we may be doing an emphasis on one or an emphasis on the other. Or go through the progression. You go through as a brahmacharya, get trained, then become a grihastha, then like this. But it has, as this goes, one has to bring you to the next. And it ultimately has to bring you to pure devotion. So for devotees, it's an advantage because that idea is already there, that understanding. So for them, the whole process works much easier and much quicker. Mm-hmm. Right? For the materialist, this will take a long time. Right? But once they contact the devotees, the association of the devotees, and develop that faith, then it happens very quickly. Yes?
Can we say that there are two ways to regulate human life? One is varnashrama, which is a traditional kind of way,
mm-hmm.
and another is vaiti sadhana bhakti.
Mm-hmm.
So if we are not from that kind of background, the traditional, then we should just dive into vaiti sadhana. That will regulate our life.
Yes.
Open the bus.
Yes.
To the higher realm.
Yes. You see, that's what Prabhupada did. Because he was always talking about the elements of Varnashram and all that, because it comes up in the discussions in scripture. But he just had them absorbed in hearing and chanting. Right? And then when that didn't work out as much, then he introduced Pancharatra.
Right.
So then he gave that morning program in 1980. So the program we have now, basically, that's what was given in 1980. That means from 66 to 1970. So 66 to 69, those years there, then they just did Harinam. Chandra the Japta did Harinam, did some reading, and unfortunately only Satsarup Maharaj did some reading. And so that's what Prabhupada figured out, that okay, we have to regulate all this. Yes. Because otherwise, when all the bogus philosophy came up, he was the only one that had any, could argue it. You know, everyone else felt something was wrong, but they didn't know how to articulate it. So that means that's, as Tapa and Mishra?
Yeah.
Then pointed out, then that makes one a Kanista pure devotee. Because you couldn't argue it, but everyone was dedicated to pure devotional service. So Prabhupada introduced that. But you see, by 75, then he's saying we need to introduce Varnashram, because it's not fully engaging everybody. Many people, you know, they're arguing over who's in control and how come he has more facility and this and that. If that's your consideration, go out and get your facility. You know, brahmacharis, they have this, and whoever ends up in the closet here and that room there, then, you know, how come he gets a private closet, you know, like that. So then, you know, show up earlier next time. You know, so the whole thing is that then you have to have Varnashram. And Varnashram, even though it's one of the religious processes, it's the one process in which all the other ones can nicely fit in and create a homogenous culture. That's the advantage of it. While you see others, they don't necessarily are very homogenous. Like you see in India, so many different languages, so many different backgrounds, so many different things, but the culture is common. The experience of that culture is common. But if you go to anywhere else, the differences between the religions and this and that, it's not necessarily very common. Right? And so the only one that's gotten out far enough that has zero regulation, you know, from the religious point of view, then that's what's then being used in the world.
It's the most popular now.
It's the most popular. Because there is no regulation. I think the only thing that the strict Christian regulation is don't eat humans. That's it. You know? That's the only one. Otherwise, there's no regulation when you get up, go to bed. There'll be maybe in the local area some tradition, but that's governed by pranamoy. And so if you follow that, then you're a good religious man. But the religion itself is not defining anything. While you go back a bit, then there's a little bit more regulation. You know, as farther you go back, then the more regulation there is. You know. So that's the point, is that they want to deregulate. That was Paul's whole point. He wants to deregulate. Then people will take it up. And so then you have, yeah. You know, follow this guy and you're saved. Do whatever you want, but if you have faith, then you're saved. As long as you're following what we're doing. If you're following, you know, one of the other 1,000 groups of the same religion, then they're all going to hell. You know, so it's a bit of a problem. So there's no regulation. There's nothing to regulate. There's nothing in it to create that regulation, other than the social status and other things like that. So that's the difficulty, is there's no sense of duty. It's just a mode of passion. You want to move up, then you have to follow the things and do what everybody else does and be part of the system. Then it works. So it doesn't have any regulating element. Because where's the tradition? Every year they're breaking down a new tradition. you know, the intellectuals and all, they try to get rid of another tradition that stops sense, that regulates, and everything that regulates sense gratification, we got to get rid of it. And then there's nothing left, and everybody does whatever they want. Yeah. Yes?
Regulation was imposed by fear, originally, like in early Christianity.
Yes.
They imposed regulation by imposing fear.
Fear, yes.
Burned down to hell. Today, if they, you know, those guys that stand on stage and talk about Jesus.
Right. Remember? The pulpit pounders.
Yeah. You know, they say you burn down to hell for eternity. Yeah, right. Who cares? You know? People don't care anymore.
They don't have a sense of time, I guess.
Yeah. They don't even believe in hell, so why go to hell? This is hell.
Yeah, I think probably what's this, that one in London or something. He's asking what is hell. He's going like that. He says, "Oh, you mean here?"
Hell is dark.
Dark, yeah.
So what? Dark here. Hell, there's no newspaper and no tea. Oh.
No tea.
I'll become a Christian. No newspaper, no tea.
Yeah.
No Wi-Fi.
Yeah, why no Wi-Fi? Hell needs no Wi-Fi. or even worse, you have it, but the connection is so bad, you can't get anything to work properly. It almost works and it stops, and it does that eternally. Okay, I surrender. Yeah, so the whole point is that it's to elevate you to a religious life. Because religion means that it's the inherent nature of something that you can't change. So that means it's following God's law. So the human being is to serve God, to become self-reliant. The nature of the soul is servant. Right? So that's then what it has to be. So how do you know what are the natural dharma of everything, you know, means except for what the Shastra, Guru Sadhu and Shastra says. And like pointed out before, if someone else by observation sees the pattern, they're only observing Krishna's laws. So it's said that, oh, science is different from religion. Religion means the inherent nature. You're saying, no, this is how something works. All they're defining is religion. And then they're so foolish to think, no, this is science. But the point is religion is science. What are they talking about? You know, because they observed it, now it's important. That's like the Buddhists. And they didn't observe it, then it's not important. Yeah, okay. One may serve his country, people, and society. The Varnashram system, the sick, the poor, the rich, the women, demigods, and so on. All this service comes under the heading of sense gratification or enjoyment in the material world. Right? It's enjoyment because it's either about yourself or one serving this so others will enjoy their senses. So it's still, what you know, it may have that element of it's not self-centered. But that still doesn't mean it's not sense gratification. It may be a higher level. In other words, pranamoy is going to be a higher level than anamoy. Mm-hmm. Higher consciousness. But it's still sense gratification. Yeah. All this service comes under the heading of sense gratification or enjoyment in the material world. It is most unfortunate that people are more or less attracted by such material activity and that the leaders of these activities are accepted as mahajanas, or great ideal leaders. Actually, they are only misleaders, but an ordinary man cannot understand how he is being misled. 185 purport. The conclusion is that all pious activity, fruitive activity, religious principles, and renunciation must ultimately lead to devotional service. There are different kinds of processes for rendering service, right? So they must bring you to following these 9 processes of devotional service. So that's the whole point. All these things are nice as long as it brings you to devotional service. Those who follow social customs and behavior forget to follow the path chalked out by the Mahajanas. Thus they are offenders at the feet of the Mahajanas. Sometimes they consider such Mahajanas very conservative. Or they create their own Mahajanas. In this way, they ignore the principles of Parampara system. This is a great misfortune for everyone. If one does not follow in the footsteps of the real Mahajanas, one's plans for happiness will be frustrated. It's not that it may not work out so good, it may be difficult. No, it will be. frustrated. Yes.
It's interesting. Today we were reading 16th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Mm. Describes demoniac and divine nature. Mm. So those qualities directly, Krishna says, demoniac nature. This is how it's revealed. Mm. Self or human-made God. Mm. And, you know, not following the Veda. This is the first symptom of somebody who has a demoniac nature. It doesn't follow the Veda. And then they create their own path, their own God, and everything is like that.
So you start out with the Kanistas, and then the Madhyamas, and then the Uttamas, Uttam demons.
And then the whole process of exploitation happens. Because people declare as if they are leaders of the society, but they are demons. Actually, yeah. This is what it's right there.
Yeah. Yes, it probably is misleaders. Because demon just means non-theistic. It's not about the Lord. Yeah. As soon as it's centered on the Lord, then it's fine. Because the point is every living entity is naturally serving the Lord. But if they don't take that up, they come to the modes, then they're not acting in that capacity. You know, so sometimes that thing of who's a Kali Chela, it means anybody can be. If you're following footsteps, you're not. And if you're not, you are. Like that. So everybody has to work on that. It's not about, oh, we're not and they are. It's a matter of, you know, everybody has to be careful of this. Because just Kali is just bringing about material consciousness. That's all. You know, he's a mechanical factor within the material modes of nature. You know, because it's all personal. It's not just machinery. And so he's the one that takes care of this stuff. Okay, chapter 18. Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's visit to Sri Vrindavan. So it was the last one. Travels to Vrindavan. Okay, now this is the visits. Okay. Pratigya. One must see things as they are through the mercy of a spiritual master. Otherwise, if one tries to see Krishna directly, he may mistake an ordinary man for Krishna or Krishna for an ordinary man.
This is the story of, I think, yes, they will all go to Jamuna, and Jim Krishna is there dancing on Kali.
Yeah?
Yeah, he says, you're learning there. What kind of fool are you?
You're a Brahmana, you don't know. They will come and tell you that.
Adhyaya Prakashika. The following summary of the 18th chapter is given by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur in his Amrita Prabaha Bhashya. In the village of Anrit Grama, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu discovered the transcendental lakes known as Radhakund and Shyamakund. He then saw the deity Haridev at Govardhan village. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had no desire to climb Govardhan hill because the hill is worshipped as Krishna. The Gopal deity could understand the mind of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Therefore, on the plea of being attacked by Muslims, Gopal transferred himself to the village of Kantuli Grama. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu then went to Kantuli Grama to see Lord Gopal. Some years later, Lord Gopal also went to Mathura, to the house of Vitaleshwara, and stayed there for 1 month just to give an audience to Srila Rupa Goswami.
Don't you know the story how Gopal ended up in Mathura? Yeah?
Yeah, somebody came and just took him. And then claimed that he was always theirs and that he wasn't ours and that he's Mahaprabhu and like that. Yeah, so somehow or another it happens. But he went, so, you know, it may have been that time, then up to that time it was going very nicely, and then after that, then maybe it wasn't going as well. Because it would have been after the Goswamis.
I think he found some reason because Muslims and stuff, you know, look after the world.
Could be. Like you said, sometimes they would come and attack, and so. Like Radharaman is one of the few that stayed because they thought it was a house.
Yeah.
You know? And so, you know, it's a haveli. It's not. It's just a house, how it's set up and all that. So they didn't think it was a temple. Mm. But the others, it's obvious they were temples. After visiting Nandishwara, Pavan Sarovar, Sesha Shayi, Kaila Tirtha, Bandiravan, Badravan, Lohavan, and Mahavan, seeing Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went to Gokula and then finally returned to Mathura. Seeing a great crowd in Mathura, he moved his residence near Akuragat, and from there he went every day to Vrindavan to see Kaliya Harada. Dva Dasha Ditya Ghata, Keshigat, Rasat Stali, Chiragat, and Amlitala. At Kaliya Lake, many people mistook the fishermen for Krishna. When some respectable people came to see Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they expressed their opinion that when one takes sannyas, he becomes Narayana. Their mistake was corrected by the Lord. In this way, their Krishna consciousness was awakened. And they could understand that a sannyasi is simply living entity and not the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Right? It's just a position that has its advantages. That's all. You know, that's what we're saying. It's not about the tricks, it's about love for Krishna. So the thing is, no, by this activity, then that's what gets the result. And that result then is not meaning it's the experience of Krishna Prema. Right? It's something else. So that's why we have to be very careful. That's why the jnana and kriya aspects, those are in support of the hladiti. Then it becomes bhakti. But if they're not used, that's the material. So that's our mistake. We try to use these not connected to Krishna. When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took his bath at Akuragat, he submerged himself in the water for a long time. Balabhadra Bhattacharya decided to take Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to Prayag after visiting the holy place known as Shorokshetra. While stopping near a village on the way to Prayag, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu fainted in ecstatic love. Some Patana soldiers were passing through, saw Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and falsely concluded that the Lord's associates, Balabhadra Bhattacharya and others, had killed the Lord with a poison named Datura and were taking his wealth. Thus the soldiers arrested them. However, when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu regained his senses, his associates were released. He talked with a person who was supposed to be a holy man in the party. From the Quran, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu established devotional service to Krishna. Thus the leader of the soldiers, named Viduli Khan, surrendered to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and he and his party became devotees of Lord Krishna. The same village today is known as the village of Patana Vaishnavas. After bathing in the Ganges at Soro, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu arrived at Prayag at the confluence of three rivers, the Ganges, Yamuna, and Saraswati. Shloka Anusharanam, verses 1 to 56. The glories of Radhakund, Shamakund, and Giri Govardhan, 57 and 90. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu continues his tour of Vrindavan, 91 to 127. The Kaliya Daha incident. Is that the one you're talking about? Okay. 128 to 158. Balabhadra Bhattacharya becomes overwhelmed by the growing crowd. 159 to 213. The Patana Vaishnavas. 214 to 229. Lord Chaitanya continues towards Prayag. Verses 1 to 56. The glories of Radhakund, Shamakund, and Giri Govardhan. 218, 1 to 3. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu traveled all over Vrindavan and pleased all living entities, moving and non-moving, with his glances. The Lord took much personal pleasure in seeing everyone. In this way, Lord Gauranga traveled in Vrindavan. All glories to Lord Gaurachandra. All glories to Lord Nityananda Prabhu. All glories to Advaita Prabhu. And all glories to all the devotees of Lord Chaitanya, headed by Srivas Thakur. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu danced in ecstasy. But when he arrived at Arigrama, his sense perception was awakened. Srila Prabhupada. Arigrama is also called Arishtagrama. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu understood that in that village Arishtasura had been killed by Sri Krishna. While there, he inquired about Radha Kunda, but no one could tell him where it was, right? Because after killing the demon, then they made Radha Kunda. They dug Radha Kunda there. So then Radha Kunda should be there. Right? The Brahmin accompanying him could also not ascertain its whereabouts. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu could then understand that the holy places known as Radhakund and Shyamakund were at that time lost to everyone's vision. He therefore discovered Radhakund and Shyamakund, which were two reservoirs of water in two paddy fields. Although there was very little water, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was omniscient and could understand that formerly these two ponds were called Sri Radhakunda and Shyamakunda. In this way, Radhakunda and Shyamakunda were discovered. Yes?
I have for a long time speculated. Lord Chaitanya sent the Goswamis to Vrindavan to excavate the lost places of Vasanta Rama and Krishna.
Yes.
But Lord Chaitanya found Radhakund and Shyamakund, and I've always wondered why they did not get Ibid, because he is Radha and Krishna himself.
I didn't catch that last part.
Lord Chaitanya found Radhakund and Shyamakund.
Yes.
Whereas he told the Goswamis to find the other.
Everything else.
But he found himself because he is Radha and Krishna.
Oh, I see. So Radhakund and Shyamakund together.
So only he could find Radhakund and Shyamakund.
Means only he can find all the holy places, but yeah, he's empowered them to do it for him.
Right.
But he starts it off, because if you start off with the top, because Radhakund's the topmost. And so if you start there, then from there, then everything else becomes established. Like that. But it's not that they can't, because otherwise, how does any living entity doing anything, because they're empowered by the Lord to do it, even the materialists, but here is that then these things are revealed to them by their sadhana, by their service, by the symptoms.
Yeah.
Like that, then they would go and then they would have their, that would be their service, and so Krishna would reciprocate with them.
So he started with this stuff.
Yes, because that's the topmost, and then from there everything else will go out from there. Because it's you could say it's one of the main positions of the yogpit.
Yes.
Like that. And so that'll have that aspect. But at the same time as for us, then you have Govindaji, that'll be the main for the Abhideya yogpit. So that aspect there is where we're connected. Then we can be connected to Radhakund, Shyamakund. Because unless you're connected to Govindaji, how we're engaged in the pastimes. But then give that kind of bhava.
It's also interesting that it's Raghunath Das Goswami who excavated, who arranged for the kunds to be made.
Yes.
Because he is also in the Prayojana section.
Yes, that's nice. Yeah. These things, they'll always be there. Just don't put too much emphasis on them.
Of course, of course.
Because otherwise people will just take that and they'll catch that. Like it was saying in the last thing was about those who follow social customs and behavior forget to follow the path chalked out by the Mahajans. It's so easy to catch onto those because it's something that you can latch onto.
Yeah.
And so one has to be very, very careful. It's just like, let's say, okay, Radharani's, mood with Krishna. Right? And then it'll talk about, the left wing, the fighting, the arguing, and like this and that. That'll be the thing talked about nowadays. But we saw in the morning that Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, he was pointing out that a particular verse, I think, by Rupa Goswami. And then he was pointing out that in this verse, it's talking about her rati, her prema, and her mahabhav, pratra mahabhav. And none of those mention anything about a fight. The fight's only there to enhance, but it's that mood of that whatever of value you have in your life, it only has a value if it's connected to Krishna. Therefore, you give up anything for Krishna, right? So that's that surrender. That's the rati. That's the attraction. That's the basis of priti, right? And then no matter what Krishna does, then she's dedicated to Krishna. You know, what is it? What's the last? Yeah. Yes. Ashlishyavapadam.
Ashlishyavapadaratam
kinastumam. Not this too. Yes. So that is he always, because that is then her love. Right? And so then, and that, whatever happens, like you see the thing about Krishna's going through the forest and all the little stones and pin, you know, the thorns that are there pricking his feet and feeling so bad and all that. That's symptoms. These are advanced symptoms. You know? And so then he's pointing out that this is the main thing. Then within that, when they interact, then you might have these things, because these then bring out these flavors, how to express these flavors. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You know, but for a neophyte devotee who doesn't really know much, then they'll talk about, you know, the rag, you know, this you know, the jealous anger of Radharani and these kind of things like that. That's an aspect of it. You know? And so the emphasis will be there. So you always have to be very, very careful when you organize these, that it because people might catch it so strongly. So you say the same thing, you know, but that, you know, he's, you know, as the Lord, he's going to start, and that's, you know, the center of these pastimes of Radha and Krishna, because that's the most confidential. But then the point is the whole place needs to, the whole of Vrindavan needs to be. So then he sends his lieutenants or generals, or, you know, probably use different types for them to, like that. And you can say, it's natural, because he is Radhakrishna, these things will come up. But the point is he's looking for Radhakund. So when you have Radhakund, then you find Shyamakund. You know, because because they went together, it's the same thing. Because he has to take his bath, so therefore the Shyamakund is there. And that then the gopis weren't satisfied, right? Because it's that, oh, but you've arranged that, you know, we don't trust it. So they had to make their own. And they brought water from Manasi Ganga, you know, like that. And then Shyamakund wants to come in and join, you know. So you have that whole wonderful pastime between them. And so then, you know, that's why these elements are there, but they have their particular, that the vichar means you look at it from one angle, but you have to make sure that they don't catch one angle and can't adjust with the others. You know, like we were saying, as Lord Chaitanya and Puri, then he's tasting so much ecstasy. But then doing the same thing when he's approaching Vrindavan, it's increasing. And when he gets to Vrindavan, it's even more. You know, it just keeps going and going, you know, 10 times, 100 times, 100,000, things like this, keeps going. So, because otherwise we'll take it that, oh, it's just the separation and all. But here's the aspect of coming together with them, and seeing them, and like that, meeting. So the ecstasy is increasing. So in other words, from Vipralamba, therefore it gives more taste in Sambhog. And because the Sambhog has gotten more taste, therefore the Vipralamba is even stronger. Right? And because the Vipralamba is strong, therefore then when the Sambhog, then it's even greater.
There's no end.
That's the whole thing. So one has to be very, very careful. Otherwise, one, you know, it's just like... you know, we may make comments about those following the Vedic culture, the Brahmins and that, not taking up devotional service, that they're just following rules and missing the point. But that doesn't mean we have a problem with Brahmins. So then sometime there were some Brahmins, and then some devotee made some comment about them. Prabhupada said, no, they're real Brahmins.
Yes.
So you have to respect them. And at Kumbh Mela, the devotees are going, you know, he'd go on his walk and all that. Some Mayavadi sannyasis came by, and Prabhupada said, did you offer your obeisances? And they think, what? Mayavadi, this and that. Says they're sannyasis. Yes. You know, their philosophy may be bogus, but they're bona fide sannyasis. Yes. So then, you know, then they all had to offer their obeisances. Yes. So, what I always have to see is that like in 11th canto, then Krishna got into that aspect of what's correct and what's not. But after going on for some time, then he says, you know, it's enough of this, because too much of this is a problem. Because people then see what's right and wrong rather than bhakti.
Yes.
You know, what's Because we see what's right is because it's supportive of pure devotion. What's wrong is because it doesn't support pure devotion. And some things change depending upon your platform. So for a neophyte, it may look at one way. Someone else, it might look and be slightly different. So then that becomes the difficulty, is that when prema is the central point, pleasing Krishna, then we see is that then you can properly judge how the rules and regulations fall. And so Prabhupada's given us a form, and so we can follow that very nicely without a problem. Like that. We've seen it works and all these things, and so then we go on. The acharyas recommend. We don't see that it's anything different than anybody else has given. Sometimes we were having, what is it? Was it last year, year before? Then there was the point about seemingly the acharyas up to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, they seem to give one process of sadhana, and then from Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur and Prabhupada, it's a difference. This exact same thing. It's just that the ones previous before, they were working with a wide range from neophytes to Uttamadhikaris. So they explain the full range. They explain from, KG up to, professor. Like that. There were Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati and Prabhupada, then where are the professors? We're even worried if they're going to make it in KG. This is like, nursery is, So therefore, it's not a different thing. You just don't emphasize it. So that's what happens, is that people catch a certain thing because it's external, because it's a knowledge, it's a skill. And because of that, and they forget, no, it's the experience of devotional service that's the driving force. Like that. Does that make sense? And so, yes, they sit down, they read the pastimes, and they get an experience, and that experience drives them. But that's because you're hearing and chanting about Krishna. That's recommended by the acharyas. Not that you're sitting down with a closed group and reading about Radha Krishna's pastimes, and no one else is around, and no one else knows. And that's not why. So that makes sense. So that's the thing, is one has to see that balance is always there. So you have to judge when you're talking, is that if you start talking, you see that there's some glitch, adjust on the spot. You have to immediately. Because otherwise, if you follow it, you may have that plan, but when you see the mood is different, you adjust from it. You can't continue on that. Because otherwise, then they'll catch it, and either they'll create doubts, or it'll create, certain attachments. It'll create all kinds of weird things.
Speculation.
Yeah, all kinds of speculation. So the thing is it's these things are correct. You just have to see that it's not taken too far.
Or read too much into it.
Yeah, you don't read too much into it. Like I said, Lord Chaitanya, then, he's in the mood of his concert, Radharani. So then, Lord Nityananda, he's also in ecstasy. Is he in the mood of his consort? Like that. And then Shivaram Maharaj says, don't go that far. He says, huh? Yeah, he said, don't go that far. It's not about that. It's about Krishna. Krishna's come to taste this, not Lord Nityananda. He's come to assist in the pastimes. So don't read these things into it. Like that. So unless the acharyas, reveal it, don't go there.
Yes.
Like that. Because otherwise, you can take so many things. And, No? Something?
It's also devotees, they try to rigidly separate two paths. One is that there's a form given and then the mood follows.
Yes.
And then the other is that the mood is installed and then the form follows.
Right.
But actually, if we look into it, there's a junction when they nourish one another.
Yes.
Not before that.
Yes.
So if the form's given, you can't really work with it because your mood not up to that level.
Right, yes.
But the mood is always there. So if we see the same example like you were mentioning, the Vipralamba and Sambhog, then Sambhog exists on its own.
Yes.
But Vipralamba exists only in connection with Sambhog.
Yes.
It doesn't exist on its own.
Yes, yes.
So there's no substance to discuss just Vipralamba.
Yes.
Because the main service is to bring Radha and Krishna together.
Yeah, so the Vipralamba becomes then offered to bring them together. You know, so it's natural. Because here he's interacting with the energy. Energy likes to do things over and over again because of the taste. Right? It's not an accomplishment. You know, is that, you know, that could be a mistake. Men can sometimes make the mistake, or someone in the masculine position makes the mistake that I've brought the relationship to this point, so whatever's the externals or the situation for that at that point, that should remain. But then we see is the feminine side of it likes to redo it because there's a taste in that.
It's all about experience.
Yeah, it's all about the taste. Yeah, so that's then what drives. Yeah, but even then, you see that little bit we were saying is what was it? We were talking about that the beginning is that the spiritual master, then he sprinkles some drops of taste. That's what drives people in devotional service. That's why somebody takes up and gets that shraddha and then takes that, because of those little. But it's small in comparison to the, you know, unlimited ocean, but it's enough to bring them out of material life into spiritual. So without that taste, so that original taste is there. You just need to cultivate it. Otherwise, it can get this, you know, covered, and you know the weeds grow and it gets lost. So there is some initial, how you say, investment. So taste develops taste, like you said. You follow all these things, the idea of pleasing Krishna, then that gives that experience, and that then you're more inclined, like you said, it goes back and forth. But to start off with that, because we see is the gopis, they're not just talking about stuff that the gopis do. The gopis are talking about the cowherd boys and Mother Jashoda and this one and that one. You know, how fortunate that Mother Jashoda can just pick up Krishna and put him on her lap and embrace him and kiss him and all that. Gopis can't do that. Right? The cowherd boys can just hang out with them and this and that and talk whatever and all that. Their relationship, the gopis can't do that. So they're very much impressed with everybody's rasa, that they're so fortunate. Yeah. 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 Okay. 218, 24 through 26. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asked the local people, "Where is Radha Kunda?" No one could inform him. And the Brahmana accompanying him did not know either, right? Because he was the one that kind of knew all the Parikram spots. Like that. The Lord then understood that the holy place called Radha Kunda was no longer visible. Right, it had become apricot, you know. So then, however, being the omniscient supreme personality of Godhead, he discovered Radha Kund and Shyama Kund in two paddy fields. Right, because it's natural paddy fields, because there's water there. So then you grow paddy there. Mm-hmm. You know, if there's not so much water, you grow other things. You know, like cactus or you know something like that. There was only a little water, but he took his bath there. When the people of the village saw Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taking his bath in those two ponds in the middle of the paddy fields, they were very much astonished. The Lord then offered his prayers to Sri Radhakund. Of all the gopis, Radharani is the dear most. Similarly, the lake known as Radhakunda is very dear to the Lord because it is very dear to Srimati Radharani. Just as Srimati Radharani is most dear to Lord Krishna, so her lake, known as Radhakund, is also very dear to him. Of all the gopis, Srimati Radharani is certainly the most beloved. Footnote 13. This is a verse from the Padma Purana. Huh. And that's then quoted in Upadeshamrita also. In that lake, so it's just like we wouldn't know that, right? Without the acharyas, we wouldn't know. Yes. That's what it's talking about, right? Yeah. In that lake, Lord Krishna and Srimati Radharani used to sport daily in the water and have a rasa dance on the bank. Indeed, Lord Krishna gives ecstatic love like that of Srimati Radharani to whoever bathes in that lake even once in his life. The attraction of Radha Kunda is as sweet as that of Srimati Radharani. Similarly, the glories of the Kunda lake are as great as Srimati Radharani's. Quote, because of its wonderful transcendental qualities, Radha Kunda is as dear to Krishna as Srimati Radharani. It was in that lake that the all-opulent Lord Sri Krishna performed his pastimes to Srimati Radharani with great pleasure and transcendental bliss. Whoever bathes just once in Radha Kunda attains Srimati Radharani's loving attraction for Sri Krishna. Who within this world can describe the glories and sweetness of Sri Radha Kunda? Footnote 14. This verse is found in the Govinda Lilamrita 7102. That's also then explained. Mm-hmm. Om Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Sorry, Srila Prabhupada, keep. Sorry.